biggest stories in tomorrow's headlines. Just now on Drive Time Live with Mark Hahn on KSEJ.
All right, we're back. Dr. Henry Miller joins me from the sunny state of California. Dr. Miller, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Dr. Miller, of course, is a physician, molecular biologist, and a Glenn Swanger Distinguished Fellow at the American Council on Science and Health. And he was also the founding director of the FDA's Office on Biotechnology. Now, aside from what we're going to talk about, have you watched the hearings in front of in Washington with Dr. Fauci's other counterpart?
No, I haven't. Which counterpart?
I can't remember what Wagner or I can't remember what his name was. He was on there yesterday when I stopped home for lunch. They were asking him questions, grilling him, and about basically the exchange of emails back and forth, and also some emails that are deleted and not there because they were doing the FOIA on this. And they
You know, Mark, there's been a lot of fire and brimstone over so-called gain-of-function research, that is, research on pathogens or other microorganisms that enable it to do things that it couldn't do before. And it's a term that's widely misunderstood. When I was an undergraduate, I worked on so-called gain-of-function research in bacteria, and all it meant was that these benign bacteria would, after they were treated with irradiation in order to create mutants, they would start to be able to develop produce enzymes that would degrade milk in their growth medium. And it was a sort of gel that you would plate these mutants out on. And the mutants that would produce this enzyme that would degrade the milk, which was in the agar, the base, would have little halos. That showed that they were digesting the milk. And so it's not necessarily a big deal. And for dangerous pathogens, we have biosafety levels that have to be respected for different kinds of organisms. So it's sort of it's kind of a boogeyman phrase that is widely misinterpreted. And of course, there are members of Congress who have their long knives out for Fauci, and I think that's what is a large part of what's happening.
Well, I think that's what scares people, though, too. When you take a virus, whether it's the coronavirus or something else, and you make it more potent, if I get that right, through this gain-of-function research in order to know how to combat it, if it does. Don't viruses and some other illnesses that people will get, whether it's bacteria or viruses, they also learn how to adapt to some of the medicine that's thrown at them. After a while, they can become immune to those medicines.
Well, they do, and that's exactly the reason for doing some of this kind of research, because if you can produce in the lab the mutations that they're going to adopt in order to become resistant to your therapies, then you can develop new therapies that get around the evolution of the cleverness of the pathogen. And so that's why they do this kind of research. And, you know, there are huge, very, very high security labs in places like Fort Detrick, Maryland, and there's an island off New York State where they work on agricultural pathogens. Kind of work that has to be done, but it has to be done right.
Well, that's it. And that, what the scary part is, Dr. Miller, is when you involve the human element into this. Mistakes can be made. Humans, we all can make mistakes. One slight oversight is what people are afraid of. And they see that that's what happened, or believe what happened in Wuhan.
It could be. The evidence still seems to suggest that it was a natural evolution from a bat to humans. And until we have definitive evidence, we just won't know. And, you know, you're absolutely right about the human element. When I was in undergraduate school, some of my classmates would take shortcuts in pipetting up minor, fairly mild, but pathogenic organisms. And, you know, a pipette is a long glass tube, and for totally harmless liquids, you suck it up with your mouth. With when you're pipetting pathogens, you're supposed to use a bulb that brings it up so it doesn't get anywhere near your mouth. Well, some people would take shortcuts, and they would pipette it up by mouth and get these pathogenic bacteria into their mouth, and they would have E. coli, diarrhea, and vomiting. And so there's always going to be the human element, and I think it's probably worse in college students than in trained microbiologists. But so you're right. There have to be strictures. There have to be regulations. There has to be oversight. We need to follow the rules.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it. And you hit the nail on the head, too, when you talk about taking shortcuts. You know, people look for a shortcut way to maybe come up with an answer maybe before anybody else can. I'll take the shortcut. So, but let's move on to some of the other things that we were going to discuss. The one article that you had, it's called Got Healthy Bones? You have a new test that can answer that. Bone density, is it women more than men as you get older that the bones leach that calcium?
It is. And there are several things that go on with bones as we age. So we lose bone mass, and there has been there have been tests for that are pretty good bone density scans, but they don't tell you nearly the whole story. They tell you how much bone density mass there is, but they don't tell you about the health of the bone, the resilience of it, whether the structure is intact, and all of those things are really essential to know in order to predict the probability of fractures, and also to measure the effect of possible therapies, drugs, or of other interventions like exercise in the health of bones. So there's a new set of techniques called microindentation, which is, as the name suggests, you measure the ability of the bone to respond, to be resilient to a probe that's inserted into the shin bone. It's very easy and very painless. There's a little local anesthetic, and there's a probe that's put in like an acupuncture probe, and the device measures the resiliency, the hardness, if you will, of the bone. And then you get a bone, so-called bone score. The higher the score, the harder the bone, the better. That's going to be very useful going forward in determining the advice that physicians give their patients and the effect, good or otherwise, of various interventions like more calcium or drugs that are purported to build bone mass and so on. And bone is very, very important because fractures of bones, whether spontaneous or in response to mild or where more serious trauma, is a really important disability-causing event for older people, and can even be fatal. Broken hips can lead to pneumonia, which can lead to death, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hear about that. I mean, there's somebody in a nursing home that falls and breaks a hip. It is not a good scenario. They usually wind up dying here not too long after that. So
it's a terrible scenario for both quality of life and often the length of life. So the more that we can do to diagnose infirmity of bones and to improve it with intervention, the better.
Does your doctor look at your age? Is that one of the ways they can calibrate this, or is heredity play a role in this as well? Maybe your family has a history of brittle bone.
Not that I know of, Mark, but I'm not a deep expert. I don't have deep expertise in bone disease, but I don't know. But the good news is that there's a real-time way to measure the health of bone now, whatever the cause of the infirmity.
Mm-hmm. Here, the second article that we're going to discuss here is something you see these commercials on television all the time for urinary tract infections, UTIs, they call them. Groundbreaking pineapple-flavored spray vaccine that could prevent urinary tract infections for up to 9 years.
Yeah, this is really fascinating. Urinary tract infections are a terrible problem for many Americans. So some 60% of all women, primarily a disease of women, an illness of women, some 60% of women will develop a urinary tract infection at some point in their lifetime, and greater than a quarter, 25%, develop recurrent urinary tract infections. And recurrent infections are defined as three or more in like 1 year, or two or more within 6 months. And this vaccine could be a real, and looks like a real game changer. It's pineapple flavored, it's sprayed under the tongue, sublingual, so-called, in a relatively small study with 9 years of follow-up was remarkably, remarkably effective. And it aligned well with a larger study that was reported in 2022. But here's the bad news. Although this vaccine has been approved in Mexico and one other country in Latin America, it's unlikely that developers think that FDA will approve it in the near future without another large long-term study. And I was an FDA medical reviewer, right, for many years, and the head of the biotechnology office eventually. And I think that's an unreasonable standard, an unreasonable requirement. There's an unmet medical need in the U.S. The vaccine is already under review for approval in Canada. And I think on the basis of the existing evidence, FDA could approve it, maybe with a requirement for what's called a stage 4 post-marketing trial to confirm its safety and efficacy. But I think the evidence is there already. And this is a really, really big unmet need in the U.S.
Was this developed here in the United States, or was this a foreign development?
It was developed by a pharmaceutical company in Spain.
Okay.
And Spain, I would say, is not for these kinds of products, is not an A-level country generally. Like Scandinavian countries or Canada or Australia, but I would say it's a B-level country in general. But again, it has been approved in a couple of countries and is under review in Canada. And it'll be interesting to see what the Canadian regulators decide.
All right, trying to keep track of your bones and make sure they're strong enough, and also urinary tract infections. Is this on the market yet, or how long would it be before it's on the market? You still have to go through testing. The urinary tract.
Well, it's not. It's not likely to be on the market in the U.S. in the foreseeable future. The way things are going, it's on the market in Mexico and one other country, and it's available for a special use. A special status release in another 28 countries, and that often means that the physician would have to apply to the government regulator and specify that the patient needs it very badly, that she's not responding to antibiotics any longer, that sort of thing.
Very good. And Dr. Henry Miller, my guest here on Drive Time Live. Dr. Miller, you have a very happy and safe Memorial Day.
You too, Mark, and I wish the same to your listeners.